Blog Talk Radio.
Black Man Talk. Don't let the name fool you. It's just three gentlemen getting together at least once a week for 90 minutes and sharing provocative talk and exploring the male perspective on life, love, and relationships. Shoot for an honest self-evaluation. And I love this part right here. Not shining with some things need to be said. We'll put all that together. We've been doing this for several years. It makes the foundation of Black Man Talk. I'm Mark Elliott. Soon to be joined by Mr. Charles and Mr. DeMaurice. Actually, let's bring in Mr. DeMaurice right now. Mr. DeMaurice, middle of November, this year is going by super fast. How you feeling?
A.K.A. the terrestrial brother, A.K.A. the long-haired sucker. I'm feeling great, man. How about you?
Give me a second to absorb all that, but yeah, I'm feeling good, man. I'm always feeling good. Always feeling good. Oh, okay. You took that route. I'm not mad at you. Things been, a lot's been going on in 2020, quite a bit. But something has been consistent that I want to spend a little time on, and this has only been consistent in this year of 2020, but it's been consistent throughout the existence of our people, if you ask me. And that is, sisters are getting it done, bro. They just are. They're getting it done. We talked about it earlier a few months ago when the protest was going on, how they were basically changing the landscape, being involved, their passion, how they came involved, and they stood when a lot of us, when I say us, meaning gentlemen, kind of took like a reserve part. We saw it in sports. We saw it in a lot of different areas where a lot of brothers was afraid to open their mouth, where sisters were vocal and leading the charge. And they're instrumental in doing things that move the world as part of the protest. Well, things continue on, man. Things continue to move on, and they're still getting it done. If you think about what kind of took place in a few days ago, one lady in particular is playing a huge part in the rebirth of this country. And I'm speaking of Kamala Harris. I know sometimes I may say her name incorrectly, so if I did, please don't shoot me now. But anyway, she's this sister looks like us, and she's going to be stepping into the vice presidency in January 2021. So I sometimes, you know, at certain things, it's hard to find words to describe your sentiments when things like this happen. So I'm going to yield to you two gentlemen first, and then, you know, I'll bring mine. So I'll come to you first, Sister Maurice. If you have some sentiments to share about this happening, what would they be?
One of the things that I know me and Ice talked about on the sports show, and I had noticed is that looking at the different news stories and news stations, they're missing one part that I think is very, very important and a critical detail to why 45 is acting the way he is. We've seen it living in New York, living in Connecticut for a while. This is no surprise in his reaction. But throughout these 5-6 years, and even when Obama was president, Trump couldn't keep Obama out of his mouth. Anything that went wrong, it was Obama's fault, the Obama administration, things of that sort, couldn't keep that man's name out of his mouth. We all knew it was jealousy. And I remember watching a few days ago, and I remember when I watched it, when Trump won the office and he got into office, and Obama invited him over a couple of days after he supposedly won the election. And if you notice, if you ever see tapes of that, Trump couldn't even look that man in the eye. So that told me that was a telltale sign, because I was always brought up from my father that you look a man in his eye and he can't look you in the eye, you can't trust him, and he's weak. And so you just knew from right then that this man was faced with another man and couldn't even look him in the eye. But from 4 years after that, him still railing on the Obama administration, things of that sort. And here's what the press hadn't really talked about, is that Obama made it 2 terms. He got elected 2 terms. Trump won't make it through 1. And Obama's boy beat him. Some of that old administration came back and beat him and put him out of a job. And to top it all off, he bringing a sister with him to straighten this country out. And Trump will not be able to live that down. I don't care what he does, what he if he concedes, he can't live down that not only a woman's coming into office, but a black woman is coming into office to replace him. He can't live that down. That's why he quit during this time. You haven't heard him. He ain't tweeting. He's trying to overturn this stuff. That's why he quit, because he can't live up to Obama, and he can't live up to a woman, a black woman, a multiracial woman is coming to replace you because you couldn't get it done.
I'll say this, and this is where I've treated him when he was in office, and I will continue to treat him. A long time ago when I was in radio, my program director said to me, you know, I was working in an area where there's a lot of different stations, a lot of competitiveness going on, and I learned this lesson then. You never pay attention to what your opposition is doing. You focus on what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve. And if you always do that and do the best you can, it'll take care of itself. So I'm not even going to utter his name. I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to speak about Kamala Harris, because there's no need to even talk about him. I don't care what he does. I never care what he does. The past 4 years, I didn't pay attention to him. Nothing he did I wanted to know about. And it's amazing. People would bring up conversations, and I would just not participate in it. But for me, when I think about her, I look at the fact of – I think of our ancestors real quick. I just do. Because she – you know, Biden elected her. But a long time ago, people that look like us set the stage for her and Obama to do what they did. And sometimes we lose sight of that. We get focused in, and we're looking at this and that, and we don't pay respect and honor to those. A lot of those folks, we'll never know their names. We may know what they look like, but they took charges or took a step to do things to prepare us and allow us the way we live now that a lot of us take for granted. And they allow her to be put in that position. And I'm happy to see her make it there. Just make it there, because we all stand on other people's shoulders. We owe a debt of gratitude, too. So I can't look at anything outside of that. I want to see anything outside of that. I'm happy for her. I remember paying attention to her a few years ago, and I like what I saw, but I thought some things about her kind of need to be fine-tuned. Even when she ran for president a few months ago, I thought some things could stand to be a little fine-tuned. And I tell you, in a short period of time, those things became very fine-tuned, and she's ready. And my prediction and my projection is that in 2 years, I'm going to get over 2. I think it may happen in a year. She'll be president of this country, because I don't think Biden really wants to go through 4 years. That's a grueling job to have. His age, he ran several times in the past, never got close. And I think this is something he wanted to accomplish. I'm not saying he doesn't want to do the job, but I think he takes care knowing that he's going to step aside at some point, and he trusts her to lead this country, and so do I. With that being said, I want to bring Mr. Charles in and get his opinion. Mr. Charles, we're talking about one Kamala Harris. Your sentiments around her, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, we're good, bro. Welcome good. In.
Appreciate it. Regarding Ms. Harris, I'm excited. I'm excited. I was surprised. People asked me, did I think she would be the right person for the position? And I said I didn't know, because I wasn't sure America was ready. And I said that about African-American men. Actually, I thought an African-American woman would be closer in a position faster than an African-American man or man of color. I just did, and that surprised me. So to see her here, I wasn't sure if she was the right choice for vice president. But the country proved me wrong, which I'm glad of. And not only was she prepared, she was ready, and she was ready to move forward. And as you said before, worked on some things before it was time for her to receive that position. The other part is that I'm really happy for women, particularly women of color, because for the longest time, we who know what it's like to grow up in a certain type of household know how oftentimes women of color feel disrespected, feel like they don't get their fair shake, rightfully so, and often and many times, and they don't feel like they are received equally. And for her to be selected and then now to move forward into a very unique position says a lot, and I'm happy for women and for little girls that are coming along afterwards that will be able to see history and perhaps a lot of them to see somebody that looks like them. So I am super excited for women and these, and particularly the young ladies of color in the future.
As I said earlier, man, sisters are getting it done. They just are. And we always want to salute them and honor them. There's another lady I want to bring to our attention. We talked about her on this show a few years ago. And this hasn't really hit the mainstream like it should. And if it did, it kind of didn't stay there like it should. But this lady really turned the election over to Biden and Harris. And I'm speaking of one Stacey Adams. Abrams, I'm sorry. Do you remember a couple of years ago, she ran for governor in Georgia? And back then, we were talking about, at least I talked about, that she lost by 55,000 votes. But 4 years prior, or 2 years prior to that, when the presidential election happened 4 years ago, the governor had, and the state of governor of Georgia has been a red state for years. But one thing that I noticed, and we talked about on the show, there was 650,000 people in Georgia that look like us that would not register to vote. So from that four-year span, move up 2 years to where she ran for governor, and she lost by 55,000 votes. So you would think that that would happen, and she'd be pissed off, and she'd probably just go about her way and kind of just turn her back and do something totally different. Now, she started a program, a coalition, really, to get out and get people to register in the state of Georgia. Not only Georgia, she went into Wisconsin, she went into Michigan, she went into Pennsylvania. But in the state of Georgia alone, the New Georgia Project registered 800,000 Georgians that were not registered to vote. And the majority of them, the bulk of them, if not all, were black. Think about this for a second. You can barely get five black people to do something that you want them to do. She got 800,000. I'll say that again. She got 800,000 in Georgia to register to vote. And again, she did it in Michigan, she did it in Wisconsin, she did it in Pennsylvania. And when you look how Georgia played a crucial part in pushing Biden and Harris over the top, this lady basically won the election, in my opinion. She did. I mean, she just went out and been, she was unselfish in her moves, and she just turned this election to over back to the Democrats. So with that being said, I believe we owe her a serious debt of gratitude. And I'm always going to kind of see her in a special light and speak of her in a special light. But just as we spoke of Kamala Harris, Mr. Charles, let's speak of Stacey Abrams. Your response, sir?
No doubt. She was major in her push to have people in specific areas sign up to vote. I think it was major. I think she followed protocol for what people who know what the task is at hand, and she moved forward. I think, too, that perhaps she was able to deliver the seriousness of what was in front of people. Because oftentimes people don't do things because they don't know how serious it is, or they feel like they really don't care. But I'm sure there's some explanation of what was in front of them and what they faced for another 4 years if they didn't get involved in the game. And that was awesome for her to do that and to make that move. And it's what needed to be done. If you want something to happen, you have to dive in and you have to be a part of it. And I think that's what she did. She could have been selfish, but she wasn't. She knew in her mind what the greater good was going to be by making the difference in the election. The other thing I like to throw on, too, you mentioned earlier about other women that have been looked over and maybe not understood in history as making a significant part. I think one of the ladies, very quickly, that also should also be recognized in regards to understanding what her role was and what she did is Shirley Chisholm. People don't understand what she mm-hmm. did and how she was connected and how she was often asked to do things and bring people to the table like Ms. Abrams did. So a lot of the political party candidates had to come to her because they knew she could relate to the people and make sure that their message was heard and it would be received well in certain areas. And every time I hear the name Shirley Chisholm, I don't think people really understand it. And most people know about Shirley Chisholm is that she ran for office and she represented for a long time. And she might be, for modern day people, she might be duly most noted for being recognized in a couple rap songs. Reagan was the president, but I voted for Shirley Chisholm. Yeah. And it's shameful, but it is what it is. But, yeah, so I'm excited for Ms. Abrams, but the path was laid a long time before. And I think we need to definitely recognize that as well.
Absolutely. We stand on their shoulders, bro. We stand on their shoulders. Mr. DeMarie, Stacey Abrams, your response, sir.
Yeah, what I love about her is that when she came short in the race for governor in Georgia, she didn't sit back and lick her wounds and everything. She knew that she had to get on the ground level and get people out to vote. And she used also this presidential election to really help people focus in and get awake about some of the issues and things that were going around and how they can make an impact of them. She was also, I think, on the short list for vice president. So she was being looked at also. So don't be surprised if she gets called to D.C. next year to do some work for this administration, because she was that powerful in this particular this win for Biden-Harris. So, yeah, she gets a lot of props. Because she could have just said, you know, forget this. I'm going to go into the private sector and just do what I do. I know she worked with a lot of different organizations, not only in Georgia, but in other places to get the word out, to work for this campaign, to do the things that this campaign I felt needed to do to get a diverse group together. And not only just our people, but a bunch of people together. To say, okay, we got it all hands on deck, and we gotta make this happen. We can't come up short. We have too much to lose in this. And she was able to give that powerful message. I would see her from time to time on MSNBC, on CNN, just speaking on the Rachel Maddow show and any show that would interview her to get the word out, to talk about voter suppression, to talk about all the things that we needed to look out for, how to vote, what to do if you're mailing in your vote or early voting, all that other stuff. She was on it, and she was almost like a megaphone out there in solidifying that blue wall, as they call it, in this election. So, kudos to her and her efforts, and I'm sure we won't be seeing the last of her. I think she's getting ready to run for it. She's slated to run for governor again. In that same state. So we won't see the last of her.
Yeah, next time she will bring that home without a doubt, especially with the new voters that are registering. She should bring that home. Gentlemen, thank you, too, for bringing what you always do. Let's take a little short break. When we come back, we're going to change gears a little bit and speak about love. We seem to be doing that a lot lately. Maybe something in the air. One Black Man Talk. Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott. something gets sung about quite a bit, talked about, seek, desire. Good old L-O-V-E, love. There was a song that's been recorded by different artists from time to time. They had a saying in it that I kind of never hear anyone really go into detail and explain. So we'll do that with the time that we have allotted to it. And the saying of the song, or the lyrics of the song, was that love doesn't love anybody. What the blink does that mean, Mr. DeMaurice?
I knew you were going to come to me first.
The love doctor goes first.
Charles over there with his hands up in there like, please, oh, please, oh, please. I think that when I heard the song in years, I've heard it for years, and then I started thinking about it. One of the things that I think people do is that they fall in love with the idea of love and what that should be, and maybe romanticize and fantasize about what love feels like, how a person should be acting when they're in love and things of that sort, and disregard of how the actual person that may or may not be in a relationship with actually feels and what they're feeling. And are they at that point where they could say, hey, I love and care about this person? So I always looked at that meaning with that is that, you know, the idea of love doesn't love anybody. That your idea of how you think it should be, that's not love. It's basically how people kind of come to a common ground and feel about each other that creates this the reality of love between those two people, instead of this ideological kind of way of thinking about, well, if they love you, they should be this and they should do this and all this other stuff. So I think it's saying don't get caught up in the fantasy and what you think love is, and, you know, get into the reality of how you are loving and you are being loved by the person that you're in front of.
Ooh. Mr. Charles, I don't know if you left any room for you, bro, but if you got something to add to that, here we go.
That's hard to do, following the love doctor. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and so when you follow the love doctor, it's one of those things you just kind of go like, yeah, what he said. No. I think he's right on point, though, when you talk about it, about the idea and where people think that they have a fascination. We watch TV, watch women and men watch Lifetime movies, and they had a fascination like, oh, man, that's the perfect life. They're so in love. That's going to be me. But when you get into it, it might be a little tricky, and you might find yourself loving somebody that may not love you. So it's clear to understand, try to understand what a relationship is, what's involved in a relationship, and what your interpretation of what love is between you and the person that you're with. But I think the title says it best. Because he said, love don't love nobody. But the Spinners said it first. When they first said it, they said, it takes a fool to learn that love don't love nobody. To learn that love don't love nobody. So which means you have to, sometimes we're foolish. We're like children. We're so caught up in what we think of that premise of love should be. And sometimes that's hurtful. Because it's not what you think it is. And you might go through several different experiences before you actually find the love you're looking for.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love what these two gentlemen do. You know, I sometimes push them in different directions. I don't know what's going to come back, but it always comes back, and it's strong and it's good. I'm going to touch base on something you said, Mr. Charles, because I really do believe television has played a critical part in what a lot of people believe what love is. You sit there and you see these folks live a certain way. It's blissful. It's this and that. And one thing television doesn't show you about love, love requires a lot of work. It requires a lot of dedication. That love is not selfish. And they don't show you that when you're living in a big mansion and everything is great and You know, you argue, but you make her by the end of the show, and the show goes off, and everything's great. But I always looked at the sense of love doesn't love anybody is that love is not capable of loving anybody. People love somebody, not love. So the word itself is nice to wow, but I'd rather feel your heart and know that you love me than sometimes hear the words out that you love me. Because my heart should connect with your heart and know that there's a warmness that you care for, that you carry for me, something that you have to offer, and it's just speak to me without you uttering a word. So therefore, your love doesn't love anybody, but your heart can love me. Your heart can want me. It can have a place for me. It can desire me. So that, here again, when I should look at that and hear that, and like you said, the spinner says it takes a fool. It's funny because I'm hearing that from time to time. You're like, wow. You first heard, when I first said that, you think, okay, you got to be a fool if you're in love. Not necessarily. I'm not saying that. But to go in it and see all the great things about it and not fully understand it, that's the foolish part. That's where I find things to be foolish. I'm wondering, though, gentlemen, because sometimes, you know, we have folk that come to you and they want your opinion on certain things. And they may ask. I remember years ago, it was a gentleman at work that I worked with. He was in the process of getting married. And everyone was telling him, I think it was in his mid-20s, don't do it, da 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 da. You know, this job doesn't, you know, it's broken up many marriages. And it's going to do that to you if you, you know, you get married and blah, blah, blah. So when I was sitting down at the table, and I said, you can't hear that, Chief. You just can't. I said, there's not a job in this world that's broken a marriage up. I said, you know, I worked here when I was married, and I said, I, you know, went on to get divorced, but it had nothing to do with my job. People break marriages up, not jobs. So don't allow someone else's misery to come into your eardrums and your heart. If that's what you desire, you want to do, move forward and do it. If you feel you found a person that you want to build with, you want to cherish and love, go on. With that being said, I wonder, Mr. Charles, you know, if a gentleman or a woman came to you and was asking you about love, what is it? You know, how should they seek it? How should they find it? And if they find it, what should they do with it? What would your response be?
Wow, that's a lot. But I would say tell them that oftentimes love is up to interpretation, because you can say what should happen or what should go, right? Like, for instance, I think about relationships. I think about people that are in love or married for a long time. And certain women or men or somebody might be high maintenance. And you say to yourself, you watch how they interact. You say to yourself, how the hell does he put up with her? Or how the hell does she put up with him? And you say to yourself, I couldn't do that. So therefore, I think it would be important to tell the individual to find a person that's of like mind. Learn the things that are important to one another, and then ask yourself, when you talk about love, and particularly think about marriage, on a person's worst day or the worst thing about that person, can you tolerate that? And can you tolerate it for some time? Does it bother you at all? Can you live with their worst? And the answer is yes, then perhaps you want to move forward. Because at the end of the day, you have to put up with things like they have to put up with you. But you have to have a common barrier connected. But from to sit up and say, I don't think you should marry that person because I don't like him, or she's this, she's that, or he's this, he's that, that's up to interpretation to the individual. Because at the end of the day, I tell people, well, that person's not like this. I said, well, that's not my wife. I don't have to live with her, and I don't have to sleep with her. If you can work those things out and that's who you want to be, I wish you nothing but the best.
Wow, Mr. Charles. I it made me think about something. It was a cat when I was getting divorced. He was a little older than me. He was a white gentleman. When I was talking and we were just sharing some things and going back and forth, and he was saying to me, him and his wife decided to go to therapy, and they went. And it opened his eyes up to a lot of things. He said that he spent a lot of time throughout his marriage if you came to his house, he'd just have a glass of whiskey in his hand. And he didn't know why. He said, just always, he said, whenever you came over or when he went home, he couldn't wait to get that glass, pour some whiskey in there, and just carry it around and drink it. And he said, he went to therapy, he realized why. That was his way of just coping what was going on. It took him away. He didn't have to see what was in front of him. But he said he had to make a harsh decision. Realizing that is that, you know, is he going to move forward and deal with what's here? Because every day he would have to come home and deal with that without holding the glass in his hand of whiskey. Can he do that? And he decided, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. It may not be the best thing, but I'm just going to stay here. I know what I have here. And what I have here is probably going to be better than anything I'm going to find elsewhere. And I've been dealing with what's here. And he chose to go that route. He chose to stay there because, like you said, in the worst day, he knew what he was going to face day in and day out. And I guess he became accustomed to it. Mr. DeMarie, same question for you, sir. If a young man or a young woman came to you and it was inquiring about love, some response or something and some things that you may pass on to them?
I think that I have passed on to younger people who ask me about this is I first tell them that love is a verb. It's action. It requires motion and action, and it's elusive. So you have to keep moving towards it and trying to harness it, even if in its elusiveness. So you really have to do that because it's not going to just stay still for you. It's just a verb that you always have to be working towards it. And one of the things that I've told, especially a young couple who was talking about getting married, and I said that the key to it is that both of you have to often and constantly try to bring out the best in the other one. You can't have one person trying to bring out the best in the other one trying to bring out the absolute worst in you. It's not going to work that way because at one particular point, you're going to be sitting there going, I'm wasting my time. I'm investing in something that's not going to be fruitful. So if you two can really kind of make it a point every day to bring out the best in each other, regardless of the situation, regardless of what's going on around you, then you'll have a chance to really try to harness love that's constantly moving, and you'll be moving towards that every day, and you'll be that which a lot of people say, you know, when you love somebody, you become one with each other. That I think that's the ultimate goal. When you get to a point where you're caring for each other so much that you become one, that you can finish each other's sentences, you know what the other person's thinking, you know when the other person is not at their best and what you need to do to bring them to their best, that's love.
We'll come back to you with this, Mr. DeVries, because if you look at it, 50% of marriages, probably even higher at this point now, tend not to make it. It tend to fail. And something you said I want to spend a little time on, because I totally agree that you need to bring the best out in someone that you're with. But here's what tends to happen a lot. Someone that you're with, or you, it can happen to you or have the person that you're with, your feelings get hurt over something. You get a little angry. You're a little mad about something. Something may not have been done to your satisfaction. When that happens, how do you continue and do what you just instructed someone should do? How do you bring the best out of someone when you're carrying some pain, some hurt from something that person may have done?
You have to look at it as something, can I get past this? You know, that things aren't perfect. Nothing's going to be perfect. In this journey, it's not going to be perfect. They're not going to be at their best every day. People are going to be disappointed. But do you love and care about this person enough to get past it? And that's the question. Some people won't be able to do that because they're really not sure. They might feel obligated in the relationship. or somebody obligate them in the relationship that they have to be there, or because they love you that you should love them back just as much as they love you. And sometimes that's not fair. So love is basically that feeling that I know this is messed up. I know what they did to me is wrong. I know what they said, or I got in my feelings, or I was depending on them to do this. But you realize that that person is not perfect, and that person probably didn't mean to do what they did to you. Can you get past that to continue on if you really love that person?
Yeah. I think a lot of times, too, you have to face what was done and try to get by it immediately, because as you carry that with you in your feelings, other things will start to happen, and it all starts to mount and starts to build. And now you start to hold resentment. And if you're holding resentment, it's hard to make someone feel better or try to help someone be as best they can be. And the resentment and the hurt, especially, if it's done and it's not talked about, it's not dealt with, it's not communicated to where you can try to move by or past it or even understand it for that matter. The resentment starts to build, and what happens is those things start to really break down and tear away at the core of any relationship. It just does. And then more stuff just starts to pile in, and things start to get broke down even more. And then it's to the point where you might be with this person, but you're no longer happy with this individual. You're no longer looking to do things that's going to build them up, that's going to make them feel good. And that tends to sometimes go into a divorce or someone just walking away from a relationship. Same thing for you, Mr. Charles. It's good talk, don't get me wrong, and I think this is all the way things should be. But we know in life, things aren't always going, they're not going to go always as planned. So what happens when, that something happens that hurts your feelings, something that takes place where you may have a tough time dealing with, how do you push beyond that and still bring out the best in the other person?
I think DeMaurice hit on it a lot. He had a major point. It's about deciding whether or not can you get past it. So there's always going to be some things that come up that play a part, and something that might bother you that somebody did to you or something they did. You're like, I can't believe they did that. But the question is, can you get past it? And if you cannot get past it, something that really irks you, and you might think that might be what we call a deal breaker or something that really is going to cause a major problem down the line, I think it's best to address it. I do. And we can't address every issue, but if it's something that you know deep down in your heart is bothering you and you can't get past it because it hurts you to your core, as you mentioned, people walk away for less. I think it's important to recognize that and have a conversation. But then again, that the key phrase before was remembering that person at their worst. And can you accept it? That's key. And this kind of goes along with that phrase, remembering a person, accepting them for who they are on at their worst, and learning how to deal with that. That's part of it. And that's something that you sign up to do when you head into a serious relationship and definitely marriage.
A word that seems to kind of disappear, at least I don't hear that often. Maybe you two hear much more than I do. If you do, please inform me. But sincerity, one who communicates and acts in accordance with the entirety of their feelings, beliefs, thoughts, and desires in a manner that is honest. And I'm going to go back to the last part of this. In a manner that is honest and genuine. Because to me, that's a strong part right there. And I say that to say, a lot of times you find yourself in situations where it seems to be ideal, but people have a tendency not just to be honest and genuine. They have some habits that they may have brought over that just don't allow the honesty and genuineness to be there. And that's why I said, you know, sincerity is something that we don't even talk about anymore. You know, we'll pull out, if you go to this paragraph that I just wrote, as I spoke on, we're like, okay, it's like almost like a buffet. Give me this, I'll take that. No, I don't want. But in reality, Mr. Charles, if you're serious about trying to have what you're trying to have with someone, how could you not really live up to everything that was in that paragraph?
That's a great question. Normally, you think that's what, let's be real, that's what we all want, what this says, fire sincerity. But I think it's important to, going back to what you mentioned about love, I think it's important not to fall in love or become infatuated with what we think love in a relationship should be. And I think instead of diving head over heels for somebody in a short period of time, you should find out more about them as much as you can and then make a decision. Because oftentimes, you really don't get a chance to see who the real person is early on anyway, because we're all putting up a facade or some type of representation of who we think you want us to be. So I often say that when you meet somebody early on, and even if you like them early on, you're meeting the representative. And maybe you wait a little bit to find out who the real person is and whether or not they will come across and provide you with the sincerity that you're looking for in a partner.
Sincerity, Mr. DeMarais. You know, it seems like, here again, it's a buffet. Sometimes you get this, you get that, but you ain't getting everything on the plate. Your response, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mr. Charles said it also earlier about meeting the representative. Sometimes you're so fascinated with trying to get the person and doing what you think that they are attracted to get them in or to get them to buy into who you are and what type of relationship you want to have with them, that that comes off as not being sincere because you're putting on a role. To get this person, and you're doing any and everything to almost—I hate to say—fool the person, but you're actually fooling the person into liking a person in you that's not really sincere. So that word just goes out the window if you're not going to really be honest and sincere about who you are, what your intentions are, you know, what you are looking for in that particular person. And I think that when people start seeing that it's not going to be that way, I think that's when things kind of fall apart, that they can't turn that person into what they want them to be, or, you know, you don't have that selection that you thought you would have before. The person changes because they can't keep the facade up. And so the sincerity goes out the window, the honesty goes out the window, and lo and behold, you're standing in front of somebody who is totally different than the person you thought that you met. So it's an important word, and those two are important words in relationships. But and today's date, today's kind of way of dating and things of that sort, you really don't get that because people are trying to. I know for me, I've had women who try to shape me to be what they want to be, and I can't do it. You know, in all sincerity and honesty, I can't be that person you want me to be. So, but, you know, it doesn't stop them from trying to do that. But, yeah, I think that it gets lost because we talked about it earlier, about that idea of love and what you should have. And if you're not getting that, then it's not the fulfillment of what that person really wants.
Loneliness, Mr. DeMarais. You know, loneliness. You know, we talked about, you know, sometimes we rush, you know, we want that ideal love. But I think sometimes loneliness is a motivating factor of why we don't see some things, or we see some things blurry because of the loneliness that we haven't really dealt with or faced are conquered, we step in to and try to kind of rush love and have love, when really what we're trying to do is feed the loneliness. What do you think?
Yeah. One of my favorite songs of Whitney Houston is a song called "Is It the Lonely Talking?" Is it just the lonely talking? And so she asked in the song, "Are you really ready for love, boy? Or is that the lonely talking?" So loneliness,
yes,
really kind of motivates people to, you know, act on things that it's just that they're afraid to be alone or afraid to be by themselves. But they will run into relationships that may not be good for them just not to be lonely. And that's the wrong way to enter into relationships or want to be in a relationship. And sometimes people are alone. There are a lot of brothers that are locked up that they get pen pals that are women. And I'm afraid to tell you, sisters, that's the lonely talking, because brothers locked up, they're going to say any and everything. They get you to keep writing and the fantasies and all that. That's the lonely talking. That is the lonely talking. And when the lonely talking, they can say some powerful stuff to get what they want, especially if they tap into what you're looking for. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, that loneliness is a great motivator into to a lot of people who just don't want to be lonely, especially the holidays coming around. Oh, I got to have somebody for New Year's and all this other stuff. That's the lonely talking. Is this person good for you? Is what you should be asking. And is it worth getting into a relationship that's not going to be fruitful, than to just be to yourself and say, you know what, I could be happy being alone and not having all the drama that comes with, you know, getting with somebody who's going to really kind of destroy my life, so to speak.
Yeah, I want to bring Mr. Charles in on this, but I want to come back, man, because when you said the holidays, whoa, I want to understand. Yeah, I want to understand what's under that. I want to come back and hit that, because I want to understand why the holidays must mean you have to be with someone to enjoy it. I just don't get it. I do get it, but we'll come back. So, Mr. Charles, when you speak of loneliness as a motivation to kind of blur the eyesight, heart to love, how does that play when someone basically may have been alone for a period of time? And like Mr. DeMarie said, you know, someone writes certain things or says certain things, and before you know it, you're not seeing this person who they truly are. You're putting it all together, and you're still trying to feed that hunger or that desire or that craving of loneliness.
Yeah. Even the Bible in Ephesians talks about to protect your heart. And a lot of times, because you're lonely, you think that you really care for somebody or love them. But you might like them, but even if you care for them, you need to protect your heart. But the point of this is, when you talked about loneliness, you have to remind yourself often that loneliness often lasts for a few minutes, right? Sometimes you have those moments. It lasts for a few moments. And so oftentimes when people are lonely, they end up diving into situations because they're desperate to cure the loneliness, which is making rash decisions about relationships or connecting with people that you normally wouldn't want to be with. But because of this loneliness is tugging at you and driving you nuts and bonkers. You're like, what am I going to do? But if you can find ulterior things to cover that loneliness, it can help in making better decisions. Because when you make those, you dive in those desperate measures, and after you're done, then you ask yourself after you're done and covered your loneliness, you go, then what? And a person that might be looking for something else because they feel you had a connection and we're going to do great things, we're going to live happily ever after, and you're like, hell, I just covered my loneliness. I'm back to my regularly scheduled program.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you hit this on the nail, Ms. DeMarie. I'm going to come back to you with this one. But maybe men and women look at this differently. But why? I you know, you've heard this. I'm sure we all have heard this. Why is it a big push to spend holidays, this big romantic push to spend holidays? I'm not like saying I'm against, but why, if you're not spending time with someone on a holiday, Christmas, Thanksgiving, I mean, to me, New Year's Eve is not even a holiday. It's not. But why, if you're not in the company of someone for those three times of the year, you feel less than? You feel it's a void. What is behind that?
I mean, look at how it's commercialized. I mean, there's a channel I just flipped past right now, the Hallmark Channel. They've been showing Christmas movies. All of it got to do with relationships and finding that right one. It sells, man. It sells. And then folks get an idea, a perception that, you know what, that makes the holiday complete. I got to have that. That's what it's supposed to have. That's the Christmas tree, the lights, the eggnog, the silent night song, and all this other stuff, because that is what everybody else is, you know, we're expected to do that. It's commercialized that way. The jewelry commercials. Oh, buy her this.
Oh, my
goodness. For Christmas.
Oh.
You know, I was talking to a female friend of mine. I'm like, there are no holidays for males. No, there needs to be a holiday for men, because most of the holidays are for women to get them a present, all for women. And no holidays that we go celebrate just being a man and all that other stuff. Even Father's Day is taken by women. Oh, I've been a father to my children. Yeah. We don't have one. We don't. So it's commercialized that way.
Bro,
it is. You got to have a turkey at Thanksgiving. You got to go Halloween, trick or treat on Halloween.
Father's Day is a shame. Let's be honest, bro. You know it. Father's Day is a shame.
Valentine's Day. That ain't for me. Christmas, New Year's, that ain't for me. None of these holidays for me. I don't expect any gift. You know, I got to the point where I don't even want nothing. Because what you going to give me ain't no thought to it. Just let me rest that day. That's what I do on Father's Day. You want to go out anywhere? Nah, I just want to sit in front of the TV and not be bothered. Don't call, don't text. It ain't for me. Whatever you got planned, I'm going to be paying for anyway. So I'd rather just keep my money in my pocket, be quiet, and just have a day to myself. That's all I want. Even my birthday this year. People who didn't know my birthday, I didn't tell them. I just want to have a day where I'm just sitting there. And that's it. Whatever you plan ain't going to be what I want. So I know I can go to the store and do whatever I want, buy whatever I want, and I'll enjoy it that way. But, you know, it just got to a point where it was like, this is pathetic. But you talk to mamas and women, oh, my goodness. It's set up for them. And the pressure is on us as males to do it for them, because that's what you see in all the commercials. That's what you see. Like, you ever see the truck commercial? The guy buys, she buys him some watches.
Yeah.
So this is our present to you. Yeah, and then he goes out and says, well, this is our present for me. The huge two trucks. I want this one. Well, I thought, no, I like this one. And it's for women. It ain't for us. I mean, it's illustrated right there. I'm sorry, man.
No, don't be sorry, bro, because you said – I love when we all say something that men basically feel, bro. You know what I mean? And we basically feel, and it's like it's almost like a union. We feel it at the same time, and you're right.
It's
like,
never gets
better for us.
It's our union tour, because this ain't getting better.
Yes. No, it doesn't, bro. We figured out years ago it doesn't get any better. But it's just, the reality is, like you said, here again, it's been sold. If you don't have this, and you know the funny thing, I'm gonna say this, and it may not be received well, but that never stopped me from saying anything before in my life. And what really I find to be surprising about what you just said, in the bottom of this, even when we talked about television and everything else, the majority of time women have watched that and seen that, they've seen white women in that position. They've looked at a white woman gets this, she gets that, she has this, she has that. You talk about Lifetime. I don't think there's many shows that there were black women trying to find love, whatever. I'll just be honest with you. I don't think there are. And I haven't seen Lifetime in years. But I know a woman who sits there on a Sunday and watch Lifetime all day. Bang, ba bang, ba bang. One comes up another. Bang, ba bang, ba bang. Like, how do you sit there and watch that all day and don't come away with some thoughts? But my point is, you're sitting there watching them project this white woman and not realizing that this stuff was drawn up. Writers sat down and put this together. It's not necessarily real. Now, you come across a gentleman you want to be with, you're trying to get him to live this out. He must live this out to make you happy. And a lot of times, men will just do it because they want you to be happy. We don't want to be doing that nonsense.
That'll keep her quiet for a while.
Yes, yes. So it's so funny because I've always felt like this. You should shower someone with gifts or whatever all throughout the year. A calendar should not tell you when to do something. Any bozo can go buy roses for $100 for Valentine's Day. How about buy the flowers all throughout the year? How about that? But no. If they don't get that on Valentine's Day, they don't feel like they're loved. They just don't feel like they're loved. If you can't be around them on Thanksgiving, there's something wrong. If you can't show up on Christmas and make an appearance, there's something wrong. I remember when my son, when the mother was pregnant with him, and the baby shower took place. I didn't go to the baby shower. So my son's grandmother said to me at the baby shower, "You didn't show up." I said, "There was no place for me. What am I going to do at a baby shower?" "Well, it would have been nice." "No, it would have been nice for you." She said, "Well, people want to see." "I don't give a damn what people want to see. My job is to be a father to your child inside the womb. My job is not to show up and play tiddlywinks and y'all can look and start the gossip or whatever. I'm not about that life." So they have taken, even now, they've taken baby showers and turned them into parties, bro. It's a big party now. Baby showers are big business now. Big business. The guys show up, they're hanging out, they're cooking out. What the hell is that going on? So you're right. You know, I love it when we say things that, hey, that's why I throw this stuff out there sometimes, bro, because I love when we can say some things that we don't shy away from it. And you're right. There is no holiday for us. Father's Day is a sham. And like you said, women now, they want to jump in and say, "I've been a father." You can't be a woman and be a father. You just can't. But they don't even want us to have that day. And half the time, you get a tie that we don't want, something that don't fit.
So far,
you know what
rope.
I mean? Yes.
You stink. You this is so far.
Like you, thank you. Then went off to CVS and grabbed you something real quick. or they get you a card that has no meaning. You read the card like, "Man, just don't go with us. You've been arguing for the last 3 months. You're going to give me a card talking about how we get along with. What are you talking about?" Oh, alone for the holidays, Mr. Charles. What's going on with this?
This
my
should
brother?
Be church right here. This should be, I'm feeling this. This should be church right here.
Yeah, well, you mentioned about the you mentioned about the gifts. I mean, who can forget Group by Fabric J? You know. I mean, come on, really? Really? But I digress. Anyway, you know that came from Rite Aid. Hell. That was on your way home. And you had the nerve to wrap it up in a. You did not have the nerve to wrap it up in a as a gift. It's a gift of wrapping paper. But a lot of it was you said is right about commercializing the situation and a lot of the pressure from the office and the family. You know, at the office, what happened? All those stories and the family. And you know about the holiday stories. And we know oftentimes women it just burns them to their core when they have to listen to another story with the family. And you know how it goes, yeah, girl. And they talk about those, even the songs. And the stories about he played this song and it was like a candlelight dinner. They had the songs going, the wine was flowing, fireplace was lit, love making, waking up together, then breakfast. And we just spent the next 3 days together. You're like, oh, my God. That's a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure. All those things, it's just like life out of the Lifetime movie. You know, that's what it is. But, and the more pressure there is, like you said, about going to a baby shower. Yeah, that's the man's role now. Showing up for baby shower, they don't even act like you there. You just in the corner. Oh, there he is. Yeah. Hey, Robert. Yeah. Hey, baby. Yeah, all right. Yeah. There he is. You gonna start putting gifts in the car now? Yeah, you put the gifts in the car now, and then when you go to the baby shower, you see another man. You say, "Oh God, I hope he's not gay. And if he is, let's get a drink anyway." You look at each other like, damn, that made you come too, huh? He's like, yep.
Yeah.
I meet you in the kitchen. Hey, you know what? I meet you in the car. Where y'all going? I'm going to help him get some cake out in the car.
Bad, man. This is bad. This is real bad.
I love the fact that we don't shy away, but what needs to be said. It's what we are here. It's when black men talk. Let's take a little break. We'll come back. We'll get some questions from probably need to reset after that. Get some questions from Mr. Charles and Mr. DeMaurice. I'm Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice. We are black men. Say this real quick, bro, because for some reason this song been staying in my head for the past 2 days, man. And I forgot what we were talking about a few years ago, but Mr. Maurice, you came up with this out of nowhere, bro. You just said there's an old blues song. I'm gonna allow you to say it because you brought it to us, bro. I'm gonna allow you to say it, but just give us the title. That's all I need, the title right now. But that song is on my head for the last several days, bro. I've been humming it and singing it. If you know it, just give us a time. That's all I want. Give us a time.
I think it's, a lot of blues songs, but Your Kitchen Was Closed, So Don't Worry About Where I Eat. Is that the one?
Oh, yes.
Your kitchen was closed.
Woo!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Mr. Charles. Oh, man. You have a question for us, sir.
Yeah. Consider what we talked about with Ms. Harris accepting the role of the vice presidency. Also, the fact that Kim Ning is becoming the first Asian American to serve as first female to serve as a general manager in Major League Baseball. For the Marlins, do you think that these type of accomplishments are opening the door for women of color to become more of the world's power brokers?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. I'll be honest with you, man. That baseball thing, I didn't realize as a woman. I know it was Asian. So thanks for saying that, bro, because I was misguided on that one. But I believe so. I think things happen sometimes to show others that may not be aware or show others that are afraid to do such. And a lot of times certain things don't happen because people are just they're afraid to kind of be the first to do anything or to try anything because they don't want to step out there and they fail. And then folks point fingers at them. But I think in our climate now, I think more people are going to be more daring and open to it. And that's not going to be the whole world. And what I will say in saying that is I think, and I always felt this, anytime something like this happened, stop paying attention to the pushback. Don't focus on the pushback. And I see people do that way too much. They sit around and they wait for the pushback, and then they comment on it. There's always going to be pushback. But it's not the pushback that's important. It's the progress. It's what's taking place. It's what's happening, which should be focused on, and focused on squarely and only. So, yeah, I believe so, man. I think that not only just with Kamala Harris, I think there's a lot of things that's been brewing, and a lot of it, we sometimes just don't get exposed to it because the mainness of our country doesn't really highlight it like it should. But there's a lot that's been going on with Sisters Brothers. When I say they're getting it done, they've been getting it done for a while. It's like it's nothing new. They've really been getting it done for a while, but they just don't, it doesn't get the exposure that it should. But I think now it will. I think now things kind of turn a little bit, and it will. So yeah, that tide is turning. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a major shift, and I hope the momentum keeps going, especially with the Asian sister who was just named Kim Ng, who was just named general manager of the Marlins. And it's way overdue, man. It's way overdue. There are a lot of women who are much more knowledgeable in a lot of different areas and much more effective in a lot of different areas than some of these brain-dead men who get put in place in certain organizations and ahead of certain things who just don't have a clue. And they get the job just because they're merely a man. But I look forward to seeing it. I actually thought Ms. Fernandez, who does the Major League Baseball games on ESPN with Alex Rodriguez, would have got the nod for a general manager job or work in somebody's organization. I know she's a journalist, but I love listening to her commentating the games in baseball because she's much more knowledgeable about the game than even the head host of baseball. And I just love listening to her voice. How she knows the batters and all the nuances of the game. So I hope this momentum keeps going on, and because women have been really kind of put on the back burner of history, women have a very pivotal role in a lot of our history. But it's a patriarchal society where men have to be out in front, but women are finding their ways to get out in front and to tell their own stories. And not wait for men to come around and validate them and tell their stories. So kudos to all the women, Kamala Harris, all the women who were on that short list of being vice president that Joe Biden was going to pick. They're going to be making some noise. There were a lot of women, Rice, Abrams, a whole lot of women who he had tapped of being vice president. And they're going to be a lot of women making a lot of noise, changing the landscape of the government, and more power to them, more power to them. It's the best minds. It's not whether you're a man or a woman. It's the best minds that need to be in leadership. And hopefully society will start seeing that.
Great question, Mr. Charles. Your response, sir?
No doubt. I think the time is right. I think women see that, and the world is open to a lot of different things. The timing is right, so they should move forward. We have seen some great examples. I hope that they are given a fair chance to succeed and fulfill at times and not be persecuted if they have a few missteps, because that's how we like to do. We like to chastise people, particularly women, early on, but they fall a little short in something that may be foreign to others. So I think if you give them enough time, let them see, give them the same benefits that you would men in certain positions, and take it from there. But I think it's their time to do what they need to do in the leadership positions.
Adding to that, man, I don't know why it's taken Becky Hammon a long time to get an NBA head coach job in the NBA. I just don't get it. I think she may have interviewed for one other job. And I'm surprised that San Antonio Spurs haven't kind of moved to that position. I mean, I know she coached the Summer League team and did an awesome job with it. And I don't know why. Because if you can push around gayness, and that guy came out, the assistant head coach of the Golden State Warriors, about him being gay, whatever, make that a big deal, what's going on? Really, what's going on? So, I mean, she's more than capable. And I think it's time that some ownership or the NBA itself, you know, stop pushing the banner of gay men and all that nonsense and realize that this woman is capable of being a leading men and having them do their jobs correctly. So, yeah, I mean, that's something that I'm surprised hasn't taken place. But it just seems like sometimes as this country and as men, we get on different agendas. Other than realizing, you know, this is a mind and a person that can get the job done, whether she's a male or female. And like you said, it's about being efficient. It's not about male or female. So, yeah, that needs to continue on. Your question, Mr. DeMaurice.
My question is, can you think of a childhood memory around family or going to church or something that kind of makes you chuckle to this day? That brings a smile to your face or brings back kind of like times where life was more simpler.
Ooh, man, I might have to. Wow, wow, man. I'll say this, man. There's a bunch to choose from, but I had this uncle on my father's side. Uncle Robin. And Uncle Robin was a quiet cat unless he had a little liquor up in him. He got liquor up in him. He was always fun to be around, very fun to be around. And for some reason on Saturday mornings, he had a brother, another brother other than my father, Nate, Uncle Nate. And he would always go over to Uncle Nate's house every Saturday morning, a little tanked up, and they would just get into arguments all the time. And he would come and visit us and talk about the arguments and always talk about what's going on. And the majority of times, my father would just sit there and wouldn't even listen to him. But just to hear him talking and acting out was just hilarious. I know a lot of people may not find that funny, but we knew Uncle Robbie, and once he got a little tinked the way he would talk, you know, it was like almost watching Robin Harris. To an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's the thing that made Robin Harris kind of stand out. He just reminded you of somebody you knew or somebody was in your family. But yeah, that's what I would offer up. Mr. Charles, your response, sir.
Yeah. When he mentioned church, DeMaurice and I talked about this. We realized we were in college and together. And then didn't realize that we were acting in close proximity to one another. They're like, well, you were in that place? Yeah, I was in that place. So going to church, I mean, I started going to church when I was like real young, got baptized early, and I really was so much into the word and really loved going to church and being there and singing in the choir and all that stuff. But there were always different preachers that would come by, and then there was one preacher from Louisville, Kentucky, that would come to our church every year. And he would preach the same sermon. It was about Jonah and the whale. No, same sermon over and over. My dad say he came every time for revival. My dad's like, you want to go to church? I was like, no, I'm good. It's summertime. He says, your man preaching. Really? I run in the house, get dressed, just to hear this man say the same daggone sermon over and over. But then after a while, kept going to church, then my cousins and I would play church. And I would always be the preacher. And I would talk to them when I'd give them the sermon. I would take a collection. I had it down. And then, my sermon was Jonah and the Whale. And then I said, as they had the men, the other men on the boat, God was looking for Jonah. And other men said, he's not looking for us. He's looking for you. And he had to dispose himself off of the boat. And like, God, shit, you can what? Well, That's that doesn't connect. And I used to also too used to go to the bathroom, and I get the water going. I baptized my cousins as well.
These are deep movies. I know you got something to deliver. It's your question. I know you got something to offer up, my brother.
Yeah, before I get into that, I didn't realize that we were in college together, me and Mr. Charles, and we took this class called Theater and Production. And you had to be an actor in one part of the class, and then you had to be behind the scenes in the other. And we were talking about it last week. I was like, I was in this play called The Wedding. I played the groom, and how I got in trouble with my girlfriend because I had to kiss this woman who was playing the bride. And Charles was like, you were in that play too? I was the preacher. I'm like, you're standing in front of me, and I realized that you were the preacher in this play. I guess I don't know if I was just that nervous or what, but it was crazy. But a lot of memories of childhood came from church. Our grandfather, Reverend Woods, Harry Woods, and I was watching this documentary I mentioned to you guys called Talking Black in America, and they started talking about the Gullah or Geechee language. And our folks, the Woods part of the family, came from South Carolina, which they spoke the Gullah or Geechee language. And I don't remember where this pastor used to come from. I think he came from Africa. But his name was Reverend Sims. And Reverend Sims, I think, could talk like 7 to 8 languages. And every time he would come, like maybe once or twice a year, and every time he would come to church, it would be like you knew you were going to get beaten that day because you'd be laughing at church because you couldn't understand anything Reverend Sims would say other than amen or hallelujah. Everything else was up to interpretation as far as I was concerned as a kid. And you couldn't stop from laughing. And, you know, grandma looking at you like, stop laughing. They even wanted to laugh, but it just wasn't polite to laugh. But we used to impersonate him because he used to have this kind of high, like, if you got and he was talking 7 different languages all at once. And it was like this, amen. Everybody would go, amen. At one point, I was at their house, and Reverend Sims said something to me. I had no idea what he was saying. And then my 5 minutes went by, and Grandma's like, you didn't give Reverend Sims his iced tea? And I'm like, I didn't even know he was asking for iced tea. I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah, I remember Reverend Sims, man.
Oh, my God. It was like all the Gullah language. I guess he stayed in South Carolina. I'm not sure. But I knew he came from a certain part of Africa. He was part of that Baptist church. And he would come, and they would give out part of the offering went to the visiting pastor. And it was like, how can you sit in this church and not just bust up, gut-busting, laughing at what he's trying to. And he was serious. Whatever he was saying, he was serious about what he was saying. But I learned to never agree to what he was saying because I had no idea what was coming out of his mouth and what I was agreeing to. But, man, that was one of the childhood memories that would come out I just started laughing because I was watching this documentary, and it just brought back all those memories of hearing Grandma talk, hearing Granddaddy talk. Some of the relatives of Grandma and Granddaddy would come into town in that Gullah language, that Geechee language, and it would come out of my mother sometimes. And my father would always tease my mother about it. And so getting to see that again and knowing that other people shared that same kind of experience because they were talking about it in that documentary.
I'm going to throw this out to you, gentlemen. Pick a show, man, from your childhood that you can basically, if you close your eyes enough, man, you can basically go to a scene in that show and do word for word, Mr. Charles. That was hilarious.
Wow. Probably Sanford and Son. Sanford and Son, or if we were to go to a movie, it had to be Which Way Is Up with Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus, the boy didn't turn into a freak just like his mama.
Oh man, yeah, that was a movie, right, man? That movie had about everything in it. Which Way Was Up had everything in it, man.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take. I might steal your joy with this one, Mr. Reese, but I swear, man, the Honeymooners.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my jam right there. The Honeymooners, Ralph Cram and Ed Norton. I mean, I still know those shows. What they would say, and there's certain things that I just find myself just cracking up, man. And then when he did the movie,
Smoking the Bandit.
Oh man, Smoking the Bandit. Friends of ours went to go see that at the movie theater, and we had no idea what we was going to go see. It was just something to go do, in a sense. And watching that movie, we were on the floor laughing, bro. I mean, literally rolling around the floor. It was just, he just had a way when he came on screen, the way he said things, it was just, it was just too funny. You're what you offer, Mr. DeVries?
Both of you took shows that I could close my eyes and do that. But another show, even though I have the collection of it and I watch it now and I think a little differently of it now, but The Little Rascals. The Little Rascals was that show where you could close your eyes and you could hear, you know, Stymie or Spanky or Alfalfa. You know, sometimes I'll leave the TV on while I'm sleeping, and then The Little Rascals will come on the station that I'm watching, and you just wake up laughing at, you know, not even opening your eyes to see it. You can kind of envision it in your head, and you just wake up laughing, and you know exactly what that episode is, and you know exactly what they're going to say next. But, yeah, shows like Sanford and Son, The Honeymoon, you know what they're going to say. You've seen the show about 100 times, but you got to sit there and get that same laugh again. Those are classics. Those are classics when you hear them.
Yeah. I'm going to go in this direction, gentlemen, because I came across someone on video the other day that was talking about some things, and I haven't seen her in a while, but she aged well. And to me, you know, there's not many things better than a woman that has aged well and preserved herself. And most sisters, if they take care of themselves, will always age very well. This person, I'm not going to say, you know, who may say, well, she's not a sister, but remember back in the day when she really was in her prime, thickness was there in many ways. Paula Abdul, I saw her recently. She's, for the most part, she's aged very well. She don't have that thickness she had back in the day, but I was like, whoa. And if you're telling me that you weren't into Paula Abdul at some point, you're lying, bro. You're just lying. You're dead lying. So, but if I came to you, Ms. DeVries, someone that was way back then, that's here now, that has aged well, who would you choose?
Cicely Tyson, hands down. Cicely, if you see Cicely Tyson, she looks younger. And then some of the women that are actually her age. I think Cicely is in her 80s, and she's just just elegant and just as pretty. You see her and you just smile because it just brings a feeling over you. You know, when the old saying "Black don't crack." I mean, she just looks stunning at that age, and you know, stunning from the standpoint of, you look at her and you're like, oh my God, I wish we could. You just wish that could live forever, the way she looks and the way she carries herself.
That was a good choice, very good choice, man. I mean, if she needs to, she can still carry a role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Charles, who you putting up, bro?
Man, there's so many, but. I'm gonna go with somebody just a little older, but she was beautiful then, still beautiful now, and could cause some damage too. Beverly Johnson, man. Yeah, Beverly Johnson.
Oh, wow.
She she got a daughter too now. Lord Jesus, God bless her. Yeah, just she was a supermodel back in the day. And things work well, carried herself well, and she's still holding herself together and still a beautiful lady. So it's one thing, because you think about supermodels and you think about all of the things they have to do, cut corners and whatnot, but she still has been able to keep things together. For instance, like you think about it, she was like Vogue's first black cover model. And there's a lot of expectations that go along with that, so she would be my selection.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because that's a name you don't hear about often. You don't really hear that name pop up too much. I think it did. She did pop up with things going on with Bill Cosby, but outside of that, I haven't ever heard that name too often. Yeah, Beverly Johnson. But yeah, you're right. At the time, she was knocking it dead, knocking them down, knocking them down. I'm going to get a little few more minutes before we roll out of here, but I wanted to kind of basically get you guys' opinion on the when you kind of think in a sense about I know where the world is right now and where we're going with what's going on with COVID in a sense, seems like it's starting to come back. Does it surprise you that it's kind of having its play again after we kind of maybe thought it kind of died down some? I'll come to you first, Mr. Demers.
Not at all. Not at all. Because everybody wasn't adhering to what we should do to get this thing under control. And once you got a sense that people were being misinformed, people were like, oh, if you get it, you can't get it again. And, masks don't make a difference. And the lack of leadership and all this, it was destined to happen again. It was destined to happen again. So I'm not surprised at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if it gets worse this time as opposed to last time, because you have people who are adhering to it. They have COVID kind of fatigue, you know, being locked down all the time, and they want to get out and have a cabin fever. And then you have the folks who are just refusing to really adhere to anything and getting other people sick. And when the holidays coming up soon, too, and everybody has to go in, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets worse.
Hmm. Your response, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I'm not really surprised. Like you, as you said earlier, people are not handling their business. They're not moving to take care of the precautions, to take care of themselves. It's almost like I heard the crazy word they use called fatigue. How can you get fatigue off of something when people are dying? And I think that just kind of blows me away from that standpoint. And to not take it seriously, and maybe because it doesn't affect you, I'm good with that too, but people are dying. And to know that and see how we continue to move forward, that it can get worse. They're to the point now that they're saying that if this doesn't improve soon, they're thinking about shutting down a lot of the jobs and trying to shut the country down for the most part and just paying people to try to get these numbers under control. And that's a lot. I mean, you probably have the first responders and the people that are necessary to work, they'll work, but, man, I'm trying to tell you. I don't know about you, but I don't have time for it, really, just because of the fact that when you don't pay heed to what's going on and respond to what's happening by wearing masks and what you need to do, you're not just putting yourself at risk, but you're putting other people at risk. And that's the thing that infuriates me more than anything. If you don't give a damn about living, don't put it on me.
I hear you too, gentlemen. Gentlemen, we're going to kind of wind this thing down and get together one more time again next week. I appreciate to bring it's when black men talk. We don't shy away from things need to be said. We don't even agree all the time, and that's not our aim. We're not here to educate. We're just holding conversation. And that I love we do. We'll continue to do it. We'll continue to do it strong. I love you both. It's Mark Elliott, Mr. Demaryius, Mr. Charles. We'll get together soon. Y'all be safe. Take care of yourself.